Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Confessions of an Actress podcast. I'm your host, Meredith Patterson, and I am so grateful that you are here today because I know you have a lot of choices of podcasts, and for some reason, you chose this one. So thank you so much for listening. Today, we have Julie Foldesi, who is just an incredible woman. I am so happy to get to know her better. And she is an actress, singer, songwriter, writer, musician. She's a multi-instrumentalist, but most importantly, a mom and a friend and a colleague. And we got to do a show together last year here in Montana. We did a concert together and I just really just fell in love with her. I mean, honestly, I was just drawn to her and I said, I have to get to know this woman better. And I'm so happy that I did. She is an incredible performer, first and foremost, has done so many Broadway shows. She's done The Full Monty, Little Women, Lincoln Center South Pacific, Disney's Newsies, and Sunday in the Park with George, the 2017 revival. That's just what she's done on Broadway. She's done the Jekyll and Hyde National Tour. On TV, she has a recurring role on As the World Turns. And as a songwriter and a writer, she has written incredible songs that have won folk and bluegrass competitions. Her solo albums are available online, My Plans and This Part of Town, and I swear you need to just listen to them and just envelop her beautiful voice and her beautiful essence and her songwriting, which is just amazing. She's written songs and is a co-creator of Hallmark's In the Key of Love, a TV movie that was in 2019. We talk about that. We also talk about her amazing original two-woman guitar-playing musical about motherhood with her friend Stacy that is called Two Mother Pluckers, which I want to see this on stage. And I just want to celebrate her because she is doing all the things that we all dream of doing, which is balancing life in the entertainment industry, life as a mother, life as a wife and a human and a woman, and is creating so many things in the world. And I just adore her. So without further ado, the amazing Julie Foldesi. So, oh my gosh, thank you so much for being here. It's just such a thrill for me to be able to talk to you because aside from like when we did Yuletide together, which is the only thing we've ever done together, which is really weird because we both were in New York, we're around the same age. We just never crossed paths, which I love about this business, which you can have all these like shows you do and then you never see somebody. I don't know why we never did anything together, but I was kind of, I'll just say it right now, I was a little obsessed with you. I was like, oh my God, I love Julie. She's so great. Her voice is so beautiful. And she wrote this song. So you wrote that song. When your ride is done tonight, which is like about Santa Claus and you and Bobby Crichton performed together. And I was just like, back then I knew in December, I wanted to interview you for my podcast and just get to know you. So yes, I have a total fan crush, girl crush, crush on you, talent crush. So thank you for being here.
Thank you for crushing on me, Meredith.
Of course. So I just want to start with talking about your background because when I was 13, I almost moved to Raleigh, North Carolina. Random. I know, really? Super random because my dad worked for IBM. And it was like
my dad worked for IBM.
Oh, really? Oh my gosh. Yeah. We would have known each other if we had moved. But like that's like the sliding doors of my life. Where we had this big family meeting and like everyone's like crying and they're like, we can't leave California. And I was like, I want to be on the East Coast, but it didn't work out. But that's where you were born and raised. But then tell me about all, like, then you traveled the world. This is so exciting. I want to hear all about it.
Yes. So we moved to Japan when I was 7 because my dad was transferred with IBM and we lived there for 2 years and then Korea for 2 years. Oh my God. When we first went, we were only going to be in Japan 1 year and then we upped for one more year and then we got the 2 year in Korea thing. And so the big thing for me, I remember we had a VCR and no one back home did in the States. And I was so excited to have the VCR, but by the time we got back 4 years later, everybody had them.
Does anybody on this podcast listening who's like below a certain age know what a VCR is?
Right. Probably not.
It's like an 8-track tape, which I was like, I don't think I've ever seen one. This is when I was younger. But yes, oh my gosh. So both of our dads worked for IBM, which is crazy. What did your dad do?
He's an engineer, an electrical engineer. But he ended up doing project management was mostly what he did.
That's what my dad did.
Amazing.
Was your dad a musician too?
No.
Oh, my dad was a musician and then decided to have a 9-to-5 job and was really, and still like really good Mr. Fix-It project manager. But yeah. Oh my gosh. Sliding doors moment. That's so crazy.
That is interesting.
So you were over there. So do you speak Japanese and Korean? Do you know? Okay.
Nine.
I don't even know what that means, but nine.
That's German for no. German. I know some things, and I know it's in there. They say once you've learned a language, it's in there. Like Japanese, I learned a lot of Japanese, but I would have to.
Oh, I don't. I don't know if you ever knew Yasuko Tamaki, who was Japanese dancer. I did 40 Second Street with her. She's amazing. And she would just like, she learned English from watching television, which I think is amazing. First of all, because English is really hard. Japanese is like, what? And she would switch back and forth in the dressing room, talking on the phone to her mom in Japanese, and then put the phone down and then immediately sound like she was from California and would just be like, oh my God, my mom drives me nuts. And I was like, I don't know another language. We were talking before, I don't know how to read music. Like, I feel like my brain is stuck in, it's just it's not going to evolve in that way. But maybe you still know Japanese or Korean. It's like deep in there. Do you remember being over there? Do you have like vivid memories of it?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Did you see any theater over there?
Just the plays that I was in. But one of the things that I love, you know, thinking about us talking together as, you know, performers and looking back at that time. So I was always singing, and then I was in a national championship show choir, very glee, in high school. And then when I went to Carolina, that's when I found acting. And then, so that's kind of what took me to New York. And then I started writing songs, and that came later. I started toting around my guitar for years before I ever learned how to play it. I mean, I took it on cruise ships before I moved to the city and never learned.
You just had it as like a prop?
Just my intention far exceeds what actually
happened.
That's
really good. You were acting as if.
Yeah.
But
I can look back at my bedroom in Korea when I was 9 years old, and I was writing songs. I know, because I had my cassette tape and I would hit record and I would write Casey Kasem's Countdown. I would do the jingles. I would do all the top 10 songs, my imaginary top 10 songs. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, I was always a songwriter. It just took me, like anything in life, it took me a while to find it again.
Do your parents, are they musical? Did it come from, this is where I'm always curious where it comes from, because it is something that just like either is innately born in us, or we have a moment where we saw someone perform or something happen, or it's just like you're saying, you had these creative tapes, which I hope you still have those cassette tapes. Who knows how we will play them, but I have some as well. Where did it come from?
That's really interesting. Because I've thought about this, but as you were wording it, it makes me think of different things. Like my grandmother, my mom's dad is a coal miner, and my grandmother saved up money to buy herself a guitar, and I have her guitar. No, it's not that one.
This is a song, Julie. If you haven't written this song yet, it's a song. I feel it.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's a story song. It's one of my favorite country songs, story song. Okay, continue. Yes, okay. I see that guitar.
I'll write that down. And then, but she also was always playing piano. She would play, she had this, the other thing that I have of hers is her hymnal. She would play and sing. She traveled churches with, I think, her sister and sang. Sorry, family, if I'm getting that wrong. It was like a cousin, but, and so I would say it comes from her. And then my great grandfather, he made dulcimers. But like I remember always liking making people laugh too. Like that's the part that's making me think that new. Like I remember on my street before I moved to Japan, a neighbor who was like a few years older putting together like a band show or something, and I was the lead singer, and comically, you know. And same with summer camp. Like I did some sketch where I pretended to be a preacher over the top and had everybody laughing. So like I think the combo of, you know, liking
You
to get
just
a
always
laugh.
wanted to, you wanted to get up in front of people, though. Was that something that you felt like? Because I would clear the furniture in the family room and just dance and impersonate, like, you know, like Debbie Reynolds on Singing in the Rain. Like, I always wanted, that was my comfortable, happy place. And when people would clap, I was like, oh, like I felt the energy of that. And that sometimes is just, it's just that over and over again. Or if you're put in a situation, it's exciting. Like some kids, it's like you want to get them up at camp and they're like, oh my God, that's the worst thing ever. It's the
Yeah, I
Seinfeld
think.
joke. You'd rather, like, the biggest fear is speaking, is public speaking. And then the second is death. And so people would rather be in the coffin than giving the eulogy. But I love it. I love standing in front of people and talking and making them laugh. And clearly you do too.
Yeah, it's interesting. It really is. I
Right.
mean, my mom said she remembers a day that I was in McDonald's singing my head off, and this woman came up to her and said, "You better get her in a choir."
So you always had this voice because you guys are listening and you have not heard Julie sing. Please go on to, oh my gosh, everywhere. Because I went all over, you know, Apple. Like I listened to your albums and I watched you perform, and you're really good at all, and like live performance and recorded. Your voice just sounds, it's just perfection. And it maybe is because you have,
Thank
which is
you.
crazy because you have a degree in opera performance, but I've not heard you sing opera, but you're bluegrass, folky, country sound is just this clear, beautiful tone that I feel like you were just born with, right? I mean, obviously you've
I
had
think
training.
so. Yeah,
Yeah.
I think so. I mean, I now that I'm of a certain age, I will say it's making me verklempt. I'm just
Oh.
so grateful that I was given a voice, you know, like, 'cause I know so many people who really wish that they could sing who are tone deaf or, you know, and it's just such a great gift. I mean, we are so lucky, aren't we,
You're
that this
really,
is something that God gave us.
I don't put myself in the same category vocally as you,
Oh, yes.
but I do thank you. But I do know that something happens in your body and the molecular thing of live performance that does change you in a way. And it's stress relieving. It's communal. It's all the things. And so to be able to have that gift, which, you know, not everybody in this world who has the gift that you were born with develops it to the level that you have and gone on to do multiple Broadway shows and albums and writing and all the things we're going to talk about. But you, I always say, do what you love and connect with what your gift is because it truly is a gift. It's truly something that you mastered and you've honed the gift. But it's a gift because no one else in your family sings.
I mean, my mom could sing. She sings in what I remember. Oh, I can't think of his name right now. This music director I had once. We were doing something for a show, and it was some song we were doing ensemble. And he was like, "Just throw it in your meaningless choir voice, meaningless church voice." Know, that sound. Da, 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 da. So that's all I've ever heard my mom sing, but she has a beautiful voice. If she wanted to, I think
Yeah.
it. Direct descendant from my grandma.
And you know what's funny? My grandmother told me that
that being a dancer, it was not a real career. So she never encouraged my mom to be a dancer. And my mom was a really good dancer. Like she'd get out on the floor and she could dance, like really has amazing rhythm. And, you know, I wonder if that was generational, that you just were not like being an artist was like, you can't make a career at that. So it's kind of like, go do something else that's more stable.
Yeah,
Maybe.
again, how lucky are we?
I know. And you had all the support to go off and do all of that.
Yes. I mean, speaking of my grandma again, so she sold Avon in order to afford her guitar and to afford tap lessons for my mom
She
to buy
side
her tap
hustled.
shoes.
She's
Yeah.
like a major artist, side hustling to afford. Yes, we do that. That's crazy.
I'm all choked up again. Goodness gracious, I didn't expect this. And then as you were talking, it makes me think about the early in the pandemic, the first time that I went inside another person's house. You know, Kelly O'Hara is one of my best friends, and
Yeah.
her husband, Greg Naughton, also has one of my favorite voices on
Oh,
the
yes.
planet. And we had done like an outdoor gathering, but then we moved it into their house. And he sat down at the piano and started singing. And I burst into tears because I had not heard somebody else sing live in so many months.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah, and so back to that, like the gift of, you know, live, the vibration, you know, where everything's just sound
It's the,
energy.
and you, I've talked about this in other interviews that I've had. It's like it live performance will never go away. There is AI, there is all this stuff happening, and people are like, you know, and the pandemic's a perfect example of how we were Zooming and all this stuff, and we were just desperate to be in a room with each other again. And those of us who are artists know why, but maybe the general public was like, why do I feel so isolated, or why don't I feel? And it's because this goes back to the Greeks. This goes back to, you know, connecting with and having the energy in the room move you, and having somebody sing like a Kelly O'Hara, or, you know, her husband, who I don't know his voice as well, but like have that resonate in your body. And
Yeah.
it does, and it moves the air, and you're like, that's why we crave it and we need it, and I don't believe it'll ever die. And you have that gift, my friend. It's just, and songwriting, creating, all that stuff is so huge and such a
Well, thank
gift
you.
to give the world, right?
It is. I hope to give that gift to the world more. I need to get my projects to the finish line. But
Which
yeah, you know, the pandemic, I would say that I think, I imagine that I'm going through this because it's collective, but it has way deepened my love of live performance. I mean, in a way that I was never this passionate about.
Yeah, and I wonder, because I've thought about that too. I wonder if that comes with age and as well, because I
Yeah,
do feel like,
totally.
you know, you're always like in this business, and in New York, you're like hustling and bustling and auditioning, and what's next, and what's the next thing that I have to climb to, and all of that stuff. And then you forget sometimes the love until you're in the room. I mean, I don't know the last time I was in the room with a full orchestra playing a Sitzprobe, and just that feeling. I would always cry when that would happen. And now, I mean, forget it. I'll just be in the corner
Yes.
crying. But you've created so many things. I mean, you've been in so many Broadway shows. It's just, that's just in itself is an accomplishment. But you have done two solo albums, but I believe, I mean, your writing is just beautiful. And then you also have written a Hallmark movie, which is also, we have to talk about that. I mean, there's so many things. And then you wrote a musical with your friend Stacy, Two Mother Pluckers,
That's
which is
right.
all just amazing to me and sounds so funny. And I know how hard it is to get a musical off the ground, but you have so many projects like plate spinning, as we do as mothers and artists and singers. So let's dive into that a little bit. I don't know which one you want to pick because there's so many things I just mentioned, but
Well, you know, it's funny. I look at my career as kind of, I moved to Connecticut 6 years ago. And so, with the intention that I was going to lean more heavily into the writing and not give up performing, but try to get more of a balance. And so I've looked back a little bit on the first half of my career. I'm going to call it the first half. And I think one of the things that one of the characteristics of my particular career is that I was always kind of a jack of all trades. I was always, and I think it's why I got cast as a swing a bunch. And so I guess it kind of is following me throughout, you know, throughout the span of my career. But yeah, so the Mother Plucker show is the one that's most fully formed at this point. And we've done it a couple of times out here, and we are currently in the stage of we're looking for our next collaborator, whether it's going to first be a director or a producer. But you know, it's kind of it's got when we've done it, you know, we've been in this career long enough to know when there's like polite appreciation and when it's really landing. And parents just really love to laugh about the absurdity of what we do
Yeah.
and how we are expected to be an expert at all these things that we're really just tired and we can't, and our brain can't even make a decision. So it, I mean, people just come up to us and say they laugh until they're crying. And so I don't know exactly how it's going to play out. Are we going to do it off Broadway, do a regional, you know, recast it, do it regionally? Are we just going to go to preschools all over the country? I'm not exactly sure what is going to happen with it, but I know it's going to have some sort of life because it just has an audience and it, and we just have a blast. I mean, when we're writing it, we are cracking ourselves up. As I know, you know, there's so much humor in parenthood.
And chemistry, yes, chemistry with the two of you. And I was only looking at your Instagram, the little bit that you guys are together, and then the little bit of the show that I got to see on there, which you're just so funny. And that energy and that chemistry cannot be, you know, casting is so important as well. But also, yes, I'm gonna read off the description because I think it's so funny. Two guitar playing, songwriting Broadway moms perform about navigating the universally clumsy, bumpy, exhausting, entertaining, and rewarding ride of motherhood. And that really explains it so well because you mentioned it. It's balance, trying to have balance. It's part of the reason why I moved out of a big city because I still want to perform, but I'm also trying to find the balance of being a mother and an artist and all of that. And if that's what it taps into, then boy, you have a big audience.
Yeah, well, and I will speak to Stacey Morgan Lewis. I am just so lucky that she's my collaborator. She is just a gem of a human that I'm thankful to have in my life. She's so wise about everything. And I just honestly, she's such a great parent, and her daughters have babysat my child. And I'm just lucky that my child gets to be around her children because her and her husband have done such a beautiful job.
Oh,
So.
that's awesome. I mean, it we know in theater, in the entertainment industry, it's a collaborative art. You really can't do it alone. I mean, maybe you could, but it always just feels better to bounce things off of other people and draw from their experience and their genius and all of that stuff. So when you find the right collaborator who also is really great at performing with you and all of that, it's just like that's like the foundation. And then everything else, which we know it takes a long time to get a show to fruition. Like it takes a lot of work and rewrites and workshops. And I don't even know how it's done nowadays because it feels like the days of like reading and workshops and stuff is different, but it takes like 10 years. I don't know if it takes that long, but that's kind of the average to get a musical to Broadway if that's your goal. But there's no linear way to do it.
Yeah.
That's one of the things in our business. It's like we're not doctors, where it's like, here's your ABC, and then you're a doctor. It's like, be a jack of all trades because you need to create stuff for yourself. And then maybe it'll happen. Maybe it won't. Just throw it against the wall, see what sticks. I don't know. It's
Totally.
crazy.
And I was just talking to a friend of mine about just I think we're in an age where women of a certain age are creating art really kind of, I mean, there has been some, but you know, a lot of content. And it's really exciting to write content over 40.
Yeah.
You know?
And over 40 is not, you know, I don't know about you, but when I was 35, I was pregnant with my first child, and my agent and manager looked at me like I had some kind of disease. They were like, oh, okay, well, let's hurry up. Because I was trying to get on, trying to do more television and all that stuff. But it was so bizarre because I was just like, what's wrong with me? I'm having a baby. I'm happier than I've ever been. And it was like this weird thing with women, which I know is a whole other podcast in itself, but that feeling of for women more so than anyone in this business, I feel like when you get older and then you have kids, you're suddenly forgotten. I feel like it feels like you do have to start creating at the biggest level, like a Reese Witherspoon. I read articles and I'm like, if she was having a problem, what are the rest of us supposed to do? You know?
Yes. Yeah, I think we're changing that. I think our generation is changing that, and it's
Yeah, and in a
exciting.
positive way, we're changing that. We're creating, and there's a lot of platforms and things that we can tap into that can change that. You just have to be fearless and talented to write stuff, because I don't know that I could write a musical, but you're doing it, and that's so amazing.
And fun, you know. I mean, it's sitting down at the writer's desk, the playwriter's desk, is a whole different beast than writing a song, I'm learning. But when I do get there, I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
Maybe not quite as much as writing songs. I mean, I could live there all day long. So,
And that's
but
funny because
yeah.
some people really they don't like writing. Like, I've written two books and I really don't know how I did it. And I'm like, I still don't consider myself like a full-blown writer. And I don't like it. I actually don't like it. And maybe it's because I was writing about my story. I don't know. But I was
Love
like, this is a
that.
lot of work. And I,
Yeah.
but I mean, I understand. It's also depends on the project, or I don't know if you're in the zone,
Right.
you're
Well,
in one.
congratulations for writing two books and not liking it. I mean, most people don't even get a book done if they like it, you
I'm
know?
a dancer. I'll do plies at the bar forever and I won't like it. But and I know that it will get though there's an end result.
Yeah.
So we didn't, we kind of skipped over like your childhood. You went from Japan, Korea, and then all of a sudden, and we missed the part of you getting to New York. Like, how did that happen? And did you make a decision? Did you have like laser focus after college? What led you there?
Well, like I said, I was in a national championship show choir, Carolina Spirit, at Broughton High School in Raleigh, North Carolina. And so we performed in Chicago and at Epcot Center, and they would bring down some professionals to work with us. So you know, that was where I got kind of a taste of, oh, this is a professional thing. But I did grow up, my parents always loved musicals, but it was, you know, from afar. But Eileen Quinn, who played Annie in the Annie movie, came to Takashimaya in Tokyo, and I followed her up escalators all the way to the door where she went, you know, kind of behind the scenes in the mall. Like, she was my Taylor Swift. So there is that. But I went, so Lauren Kennedy was a year ahead of me in my high school, and she went to a music theater school. So I also knew that was a thing. But I think when I was in high school, I still wasn't totally convinced that I was willing to make that jump. So I got an early acceptance at North Carolina, UNC, and So I was like, done. That's where I'm going. And I also had a full scholarship, teaching fellow scholarship. So for every year that you got your scholarship, you had to teach in North Carolina for a year.
Oh, that's awesome.
I was a music education major and I had a panic attack in my internship with a middle school choir my first semester. I remember it like it was yesterday. They were singing the theme song to Christmas Vacation. It was like yada 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 and ding ding ding. And I'm sitting in these old auditorium chairs watching this. And I was like, I gotta go to Broadway. Like, I can't stay in North Carolina. What was I thinking? And I crossed campus. I left and crossed campus and went to a payphone and called my parents and was like, I can't use the teaching fellow. And they were like, okay. And so I switched majors and I did debate switching schools, but my voice teacher during high school actually had started teaching at Carolina the same year I went there. So I switched to opera performance and took as many drama classes as possible. And while I was there, there was a flyer that went up to audition for Opryland. So I did that and I got cast in Rockin' at Rockville High in San Antonio, Texas, at Fiesta, Texas. And I did that for 2 summers during college. And I met a bunch of people who were older than me and were headed to New York. So, kind of those things.
It's funny how it rolled along because I would not think that something National Lampoon Vacation theme would make you feel have a moment, but that was your moment that you needed to pay attention to what your body was telling you. This is not the right route for me. I have to go this way, which a lot of people don't listen to, or they don't listen to that sometimes, if they're like in a quote unquote practical career. I say practical career because you have like a linear career where it's like, this is what you do. But for us, our connection to that, our instincts and everything is like everything. And some
Yeah.
people just don't pay attention. So that's so smart. Have you figured
Well, it
out
was
why
really,
that song, does that song still make you like twitch?
no, it was really just seeing my future
Yeah.
doing what the lady was doing, teaching. Not that I wouldn't do it now, but I knew I had dreams. And, they were there, but it was as I was sitting there, it was literally feet. I was in this big auditorium, but I was starting to feel like literally the walls caving in on me. I was feeling trapped and suffocated. I mean, literally,
I've
I've
been there.
had two like close to panic attacks in my life, and that was one of them. I
Yeah.
mean, it just like it became a physical sensation that I could not ignore. So I'm grateful to
Grateful
that.
that you didn't, that you didn't ignore that, because that puts you on a path towards all these other things that came into your life that brought you to meeting people who were from New York or wanted to go to New York, and then you just jumped in. Had you been to New York before to see a Broadway show at all? Because you're kind of close. Like Raleigh, North Carolina. I know I'm from California where it's the entire Western seaboard. So people are like, but it's not that far to get to New York from North Carolina.
Yeah, I'd seen, and we put on great shows at my high school, So,
Yeah.
yeah, I had seen some Broadway shows for sure. And also, the other thing is I had this glitch in my mind when I went to college that I think because I hadn't really delved into acting yet until I got to college, that it was kind of selfish, that it was all show-offy. And so it wasn't until I took my first acting class in college that I realized, oh, it's about storytelling, and the
Yeah.
gift that, it's not just look at me. And so that also had clicked in, like, oh, this is what I'm meant to do, not to show off, but to be a part of the storytelling world that connects us all.
The storytelling world, that's really huge. And that, a lot of people, I didn't take acting until I went to college as well. And I just would go off my instincts, basically, and, like whatever I was doing in my hometown. But then when you really, if you have good teachers and there's so many techniques out there, but it's basically the basis of it is storytelling. And if you have a good teacher who's really connecting you to that, and that it isn't about you at all, really. It's not about you showing anything. In fact, that's the opposite of acting, is that you shouldn't see someone acting. You shouldn't
Right.
see them doing anything. So it's that drawing people in that connection. That's awesome.
Yeah. So then I worked on, I did two cruise ship contracts before I moved to the city. Oh, and my uncle owned a theater in Marietta, Georgia, just outside Atlanta.
Okay.
So I did always Patsy Cline there. I flew to New York to visit before I did cruise ships, and I thought I'll just do a couple auditions. And I got a traveling children's tour up in Ithaca. So I had done like a few shows before I took the plunge and moved to the city.
Did you jump right in and audition for Broadway? Did you do the backstage paper and all that
Oh
stuff?
yeah. Oh yeah.
Like Wednesday nights, I know that's when it would come out, and I would go circle all the things I wanted to go
Oh yeah.
to and then
Oh
go.
yeah.
But like I didn't, I actually don't remember feeling like I could audition for a Broadway show yet, because I grew up wanting to be like Madonna and Ginger Rogers mixed together, if that's possible. I was not, I didn't really feel like I was good
I
enough
think you
to
need
be.
to do a Madonna Ginger Rogers mashup in the show this summer.
Oh my God.
Can you just put that and put a
Is
pin in that?
it I keep saying there's, I don't know if that's a possible mashup, but somewhere it's going to happen. But I had such an admiration for people who had starred on Broadway, and I grew up with movie musicals. And so I went and saw Crazy for You on Broadway, and that was the thing that made me go, ooh, I think I could do that. That whole kind of 30s, 40s, like I knew where I kind of where I fit, and the things that I would go see where I was like, I can do that. I went and saw Les Mis, and I was like, I don't think I could be in this show. That's okay. And that's probably why you and I, like, our paths didn't cross, because I was more song and dance, and you were,
Right.
you know, this incredible singer and storyteller and all of that. But what was your first Broadway audition? And like, because did you just jump in? Are you laughing?
Don't know why this. Well, I was thinking as you were talking, I was like, oh yeah, I wasn't very clear to me. Like yours was like, oh, that's me. That's crazy. Was it crazy for you? You just said,
Crazy
that's
for
me.
you.
That's
You
my
were saying,
spot.
yeah.
For me, it wasn't very clear. I think it was pretty clear to the industry because I got to the city and I remember I grew up not liking country music because we would drive to the mountains of Kentucky, in Tennessee to see my grandparents, and all the radio stations turned to country music, and it was twangy, and I just was like, ugh. I was into music theater and Whitney Houston and Michael Jackson, and so.
Yeah, ditto. I wasn't a big country fan, but that's okay. Yes.
So then when I went to San Antonio to work at Fiesta Texas, I just got it in my bones. I really kind of got into country music, and I realized then, oh, I'm really like a natural in this area. Well, I moved to the city, and like those were all the things that I was getting cast in. And I remember being like, I don't want to be pigeonholed there, you know, like I did not. But anyway, what I was just laughing at was I was doing this country show, this workshop of this new musical, and I had on overalls and I had an audition for Christine in Phantom of the Opera, and I just went in my overalls. Yep. Yeah, I did.
That's awesome. And I can't imagine what that you wouldn't get a call back, just because I would, if I was behind the table, I'd be like,
Oh,
to call her
God.
back, because she's funny. But what's so funny about you is that I see you as like this classic beauty, 1930s, 40s look. You have that kind of look about you. I don't hear an accent. Like, really, it's not like I don't I And I'm not a casting director. Clearly, that's probably why I'm not. I don't know. But I don't see you as being pigeonholed in one genre, which for me, which so it's so funny, because people would try to make me sing rock and do the Rock of Ages auditions. And I was like, you guys, I don't know what's happening, but this is not like, I'll try. I mean, I know it's acting. I know we're all storytellers,
Right,
but
yeah.
there's certain things that we gravitate towards that are, we just, I don't know. Like, I tried really hard to do other things. I always kind of got stuck back in the old fashioned stuff, which is okay.
Yeah, it is. Good.
But yes, I mean, that's, I think you do kind of people go, oh, you know, Julie, she's country. So she, cause she can play the guitar. She can play,
right,
you know,
yeah.
And you have this,
the musician actor thing.
Yeah.
That musician actor thing kind of puts you in a pool.
But you did Sunday in the Park with George. I mean, you've done like Sondheim, you've done, you know, it's not just, I don't feel like that's the only thing you do, but if, you know, I understand you feel
it's definitely not. I just mean, like, when I first moved to the city, I remember feeling that strongly, that was the stuff that I was, you know.
Yeah, I was up for a lot of dumb blonde roles.
And I just look back and think, I wish that I had, you know, just celebrated that. Oh, you know, I'll go this route and eventually I'll expand out. But if this is where people really want me, I should just be grateful.
Yeah.
And but we're young.
I mean, did you audition a lot? Did it take you a long time to get your first role? Did it like the cause I know this is sometimes when we look at the resume of us and then the people who are maybe starting in this business, they're like, well, that seems all great. She's done all these Broadway shows, but like, where's the building blocks to get there? Like, where's the struggle and what did you actually do in between or before you got those money-making roles?
I remember, I mean, my first 6 months in the city, I was hitting it pretty hard, doing temp jobs and auditioning all the time. But I was pretty lucky right off the bat. I had that reading of that show that I was just talking about within like a month of being there. And that was with like some heavy hitters. And then during that, I auditioned for the Kenny Rogers Christmas show that was at the Beacon Theater off Broadway.
Kenny Rogers.
And me too. And that was fun to sing for him. And so then I did that like November, December that year. And then I got my first national tour, Jekyll and Hyde, I think in February.
Okay.
So, and then I went out of town. So it was, so I had a lot of early luck. And then when I left that tour, I came back to the city, and this is when those next few years was when it was hard for me, because I had an agent and I didn't know enough to know that this agent was not doing for me what, like, I did a lot of sitting around waiting for my agent, you know, for those appointments.
Yeah.
I kind of stopped pounding the pavement as much. And
because you think you don't have to when you have an agent, you think, well, the agent's submitting me. And my agent used to get mad at me if he would call double, like if I would audition, double. Like, so I was confused. I understand we're not really taught about that business side show.
Yeah. Definitely not at Carolina. They weren't teaching that in my opera performance program.
Not where I, yes, exactly.
So yeah, I think those were some pivotal years that I that would be my biggest regret in my career, is that I let that time just kind of go. I mean, and then I was lucky I got another tour, but I wasn't building my career in those, like, I think I would say age 26 to 31. When I was 30 or 29, that's when I got Little Women on Broadway, and then I got a new agent, and then things started to kind of shift a little bit. But you know, when you're in your 20s,
I mean, how would you tell someone to give them advice on how to build your career? Because do you feel like it's easier now with all the social media and everything, that like you can put a lot of content out there? I know we were talking about that before. How would, like, I actually don't even know how I would give advice other than just keep.
You know, that's really interesting.
I don't know.
Because I kind of hate social media, because it makes you compare yourself even more than we do as actors already.
Yeah.
And so that could be really dangerous, in my opinion, if you're relying just on checking your likes and your, you know, who's looking at your video. And
But the business tells you followers are important, all that stuff, your online presence. I know that's a whole other
I know.
podcast too, but
So
yeah.
I guess my advice would be just don't sit back and wait on other people. I think that's still the truth. Like you can take control of your career and you
Yeah.
don't think that. And I mean, here's a fun story. I was freelancing with three agents when I first moved to the city, two through what I thought was like the correct way to do it, and one was through my parents. And so they sat at a cruise ship table with this guy who was like, he did auto shows. He was like a speaker for his career.
Yeah.
And he had this agent, and he just really took a liking to me in the shows on the cruise ship and said, call me when you move and I'll call my agent. And I was like, that's not how you do it. And my mom was like, did you call them? And I was like, no. And they were flying through Raleigh right when I moved to New York. And they called my mom and said, has Julie moved to New York? And then he got me on a three-way call with this agent and went on and on about me. And that was my best freelance agent, the
That is,
Sanders agency. But they closed down while I was on tour with Jekyll and Hyde. But,
but that's how it happens. It is a lot of recommendations. And now, you know, like now sometimes we get concert jobs just because of your reputation or your, like who you know. I know that's kind of like a cliche thing to say in this business. It's like who you know, but it is really true. Sometimes it takes that. And I've done that for many of my, when I was teaching in LA, many of my students who graduated, and I thought they were really talented, and I thought they had really good work ethic, which, you know, you always want to show that in this business as well, and have a good reputation, and have people who, when you're not in the room, talk about you in a positive way. And clearly that worked out for you. That was a good connection. So those first
don't
2 years were hard,
discount,
though. Yeah.
don't discount any door that opens, you know? I mean, I think that's the lesson, right?
Yeah, it's
Do
true.
the artist's way. That's what I would tell people.
Yes,
Because
do
there's
the
so
artist's
much of
way.
that in there, you know?
That's such a our generation. Julia Cameron. Oh, wait, what does it say? It's the 30th anniversary edition. My
I know,
God.
I just got it.
Am I that old? Holy moly. I did that like early. Yes, the artist way, a spiritual path to higher creativity. I have it somewhere. I actually have it here in my room somewhere. Yes, it is really true. And because there is a linear way to get into this business and do all the things that you've done, but you also are, not to be country, a pioneer, because you create your own stuff.
You guys can't see this, but she was doing a little.
I was doing a little
What do you
head
call
thing.
this?
I don't know, a head thing.
Walk like an
True, you
Egyptian
are.
head thing.
It's true. You are a writer, and not only just a songwriter, but a writer. You wrote with other writers for this Hallmark movie. How did that come about?
That's actually also fun. That was a moment. I actually had hired a business coach for like 6 months, and I would attribute my seeing that window of opportunity to that.
Is it a
Because
business
I
coach for the entertainment industry? Like, 'cause you hear business coaches for like other things, but I don't know if there
she
is
was
a
a
bit.
life coach, but I hired her specifically to focus on my business acumen. So I call her my business coach, but she was also a life coach. But yeah, like I was just really like, it's interesting. I wonder how many opportunities like that passed me by because my brain wasn't working that way yet. But I was on the phone with my friend Kevin Duda. He's an actor, producer now, and he had called me to ask me advice about some other project he was pitching to Hallmark. And he wanted to know something about the music industry. I don't even remember what it was. We did Little Women together. And he asked me about this, and I just was like, why don't you pitch Hallmark a movie with my music? And he said, why don't we? And so, like, Julie at 25 would never have, I would have felt like that was inconveniencing people and making them not want to call me because then I make it all about me. Like, those were the kind of recordings in my head that I had.
Yeah.
And so, that's some advice. Just say what we have these urges. I think they come from God or whatever you believe in, the universe. They're things you're meant to do. And so he
Or
said,
like
yeah.
an
And then he
instinct, yeah, an instinct to say something where I don't know if it's because I'm a Sagittarius, I'll just say whatever and I'll just ask the question. And that my whole career I feel like is based on me just asking in a nice way. I'm not being like,
Yeah.
you have to. It's more like, well, what about me?
Yeah, of course.
And that's great that you did that. So that led to
And
you
so
guys.
he pitched several, and that was the one they picked. And it was so fast. That's what I loved about it, is that it was like, I can't remember. We started meeting in like a meeting, one of those meeting rooms and meetup rooms in the city, and developing the story together. And then I was like, prepared to write all the songs. And Kevin was like, oh, I've picked out the songs I want to use from your albums already. So
Oh my God. That's
we
awesome.
inserted the songs, and then Hallmark was like, yeah, we'd like to film this. It was like 3 months later, it was done.
That's television for you. I'm telling you, having done a lot of television, it's fast. Like you're like, and if we're in the theater world where we said it takes 10 years to get to Broadway, get a show to Broadway, TV and film, it's like, let's do it. Let's go. They
Yeah,
have the
yeah.
money and
But
they're like,
film not so much.
yeah.
So it's either TV or Hallmark movies, right? Like, but I
Yeah.
think you're right. It's because they're TV
And they
movies
churn
that
out those
get
Hallmark
done.
movies. My sister is a big Hallmark fan, and she's like, "Why are you not in a Hallmark movie?" And I was like, "I don't know. Lifetime or Hallmark movie, she's been asking me to be in. Like I have a choice. Like I can just call them up and be like, "Can you put me in one?"
I know people were like, why aren't you starring in that movie? I'm like,
You're like, "This is not
thanks.
how it works, everyone." But what you did is a good lesson for tooting your own horn, asking the question, suggesting your creations, like your songs, that are really, really, you just have such great material. You're really talented with that. But also here's things where people talk about doing stuff a lot and then they don't actually do it. And that's one of the things that I always give advice about is if you have I love the book called Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert. If you don't know that book, read it. It's so great. And she talks about big magic and having those moments of inspiration and having them that they will pass you by if you don't act on them. And just like a song, if a song comes to your head or the music comes to your head, call up your collaborator or just get your little cassette tape or whatever, voice memo now, because we're now in the different age. Cassette tape. I can still use a cassette tape. And write it down or create it and put a button on it, and then just put that in the filing cabinet for whenever it's going to be in a Hallmark movie or whatever. I feel
Yeah.
like
Yeah.
you just don't know. And so just keep creating. And that is a really good lesson, I think.
It is. And I'm now thinking about like the me saying, why not my songs for a Hallmark movie? Is an example of feeling deserving. I think also like I used to equate feeling deserving with entitled, but feeling deserving is a positive thing. So, and I remember telling all the newsies, the people who make it have talent and they feel like they deserve it. Well, you have to have that piece or you're not gonna do well. So,
It's the balance between confidence and cockiness.
yes.
It's hard sometimes, and especially for women, because we are not taught to act like that, I guess. And you kind of look at yourself as like, oh, if I do that, people are gonna look at me as like I'm a bitch or I'm somebody who's like full of myself or I'm this and that. And it's like, no, you are deserving and you've worked hard and you can speak up about your work, which I've always been, and I don't know how people maybe thought about me tooting my own horn in my 20s or whatever, trying to get out for everything I could possibly do. But I just didn't want to regret the moment passing me by where my instinct was to ask the question or to say, what about me? And I kind of didn't really care what people thought of me, which
Great.
I don't know. That's not it. I don't know where I got that from. I really don't, because it is a hard line to
important.
Walk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was very helpful to you. And we're all thankful for that we got to share in your gifts. See how you did that? It really wasn't for you. It was for all of us.
It was for everybody. It was sharing your gift. It's going back to what we were saying. And so in you tooting your own horn, what do you have coming up, or what are you working on besides this amazing musical, Two Mother Pluckers? And then the next Broadway show you're going to get, or just your multi-instrumentalist, vocalist. I don't know. I still want to hear you do what? Opera. There's all these things I have in your next chapter of performance life.
Yeah, I have. I've been workshopping a musical that I would love to hopefully stay with that I didn't write. I've connected with a producer and another writer to make a movie into a musical. I'm not going to say what it is. And then I wrote a two-person play. I mean, my playwright friend, Catherine Trishman, she went to college with me, and I've wanted to do something with her forever. And so she wrote a play and I wrote the music to it. It's a two-person play. It still needs a lot of work, so that might be a while. But and I'm also writing a piece that I'm really excited about, and it's in its very embryonic stages, though. So,
but you literally are just saying all these things that you are doing, and it's what you said back when why you moved to Connecticut, that you wanted to write more, and you're doing it. Yeah. It sounds like you're doing it, and that's amazing. And all those things are, you know, you plant seeds and you create and you see what comes to fruition, and you just kind of keep putting yourself out there at the same time, balancing, you know, being a mom. I feel like I have to have you back on my podcast so we can just talk about being a momtress, a mom and actress together, because it's really hard. But you really seem to be doing it well. And I'm just so happy to know you. And get to know you a little better.
Happy to know you too.
And I'm sad we've never done a musical together, but maybe that's going to be in our next chapter.
Maybe it is.
Because our 40s are, we're young, you guys. Like I say that on this podcast all the time. We're still young. Like I still feel like I'm in my 20s, which is very strange. Sometimes I do.
And then you look in the mirror and you're like, these two images in my brain, they're not equal.
Or I go, I can't dance 8 shows a week the way I used to, which is okay. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like the energy of being an artist and being an actress and performer and all those things, it really does change the chemistry of your body. We did mention that. Like it does, I do feel more youthful than people my age. I don't know. Like I feel like I have so much life to live still.
And I got to play
for you. We get to play for a living.
Again, you know what this podcast thing that we're doing right now has done for me? It has filled me with gratitude. So I'm just, as we've been talking, I'm just so full of gratitude.
Me too. I say that that's the tagline of my podcast is have vision for what you want and be grateful for where you are right now, because you might not be where you want to be. And I know we all know that feeling because we've all been on Broadway and then we've not been on Broadway, or we've done the Hallmark movie and then we've been unemployed, or we're sitting in front of our writing pad going, what are we doing? I don't know. But the gratitude of just being able to share your gift and the relationships of this business, you know, it really does fill me up with just happiness and joy. And I just love it. And I'm just so thankful for you. So thank you for taking the time.
You are so welcome. And thank you for taking the time. Okay.
Thank you so much.
I can say fuck, 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 fuck now.
I know you didn't. I didn't
fuck at all.
Is that even really a swear word? No, I feel like if we do the podcast again, we'll do it about motherhood, and then that's when all the motherfuckers will come out. Because it's...
If you are hearing this message, you've listened to the entire episode of Confessions of an Actress. And for that, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. We hope you enjoyed this new episode of Confessions of an Actress. And if you did, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And also, remember, have vision for what you want and be grateful for where you are every single day. Have a great weekend, everyone.